Good evening. The context of this passage in Isaiah is actually a very deep passage in terms of what the Israelites were dealing with in preparation for the Babylonians, along with a lot of other things that they internally needed to figure out. We won't be dwelling as much on the context as we will on the topic of what they were dealing with, and that is fear. There's a lot of fear in this world today, especially lately, with everything that's happened between what's going on in England versus what's happening in the East Asian area of the world. There's a lot going on that would give us reason to fear. There's a lot going on in our country that would give us reason to fear, not only as citizens, but more importantly as Christians, that more and more people are turning away from God and not to Him. And so it begs the question, in the same way that many times throughout the nation of Israel's history, we turn to God and ask, how can we not fear what's happening? How can we not fear the people that are aggressing against us? How can we not fear the unknown? And his question, or his answer to them, comes kind of oddly, right? What does he say? Fear not, what does he call Jacob, you worm, in reference to the nation? It's kind of a weird way of telling someone, hey, it's okay, I've got this. You're basically a worm, don't worry. So as we work through this, I want you to understand that what God is saying to the nation of Israel here is not in a way to be derogatory or to demean them in thinking that he doesn't love them, he doesn't want them not to fear. What we need to see is his point and his message as we work through this lesson tonight. When it comes to fearing things, what happens when we fear? We get discouraged. We get depressed. It makes us make decisions that we don't want to make. It makes us decide things that we don't want to decide. We have to also come to grips with not knowing what the future is going to hold. I deal with it every day at work. You probably deal with it yourself as well at work. You deal with it with your families. You deal with it with your relationships with your friends. You deal with it with your health. We're not really guaranteed tomorrow. James 4 is very clear about that we are but a little vapor that will appear for a while and vanish away. So how is it then as Christians we can be so upbeat? How is it that we can be so excited about life and more importantly, have hearts that do not fear those things? Well, it starts, number one, with before we can do the great things that God asks of us to no longer fear, we have to know our weakness. Notice what he says here to Jacob in verse 14, or the nation of Israel. Fear not, you worm Jacob, you men of Israel. Again, this is in no way God saying, you're worthless to me, you're but a worm. That is not what God is saying to the nation of Israel. What he is saying is painting the picture of, look, I spoke the world into existence. I realize that you have a lot of fear. But realize, too, that those that are aggressive against you, those that in the future will be aggressive against you, those things that you fear, I created everything in this world. I created all the people. I created, as Bobby says, the habitats and the inhabitants of this world. And just as I created them, I can destroy them if they come against you. But realize, too, that you are as insignificant as I am describing you. You are simply a worm compared to my power and my might. Now, it seems kind of funny, but if you think about it, when it rains a lot, what happens? Ants infest your house, number one, because they can't stay alive because they're going to drown. But two, what happens to worms? They come up, right? How insignificant in terms of power does a worm have over you? Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. They have no way of attacking you. There is nothing that they can do to you that would harm you. They're disgusting. I kind of enjoy them because it's easy for fishing when you use them, but there's nothing that a worm can do to harm you. And that's all that God is trying to point out here, is that first of all, to his people, realize that you, in comparison to me, are powerless. But here's what's awesome. You are my people. You are my nation. And even though you are sensing your knowledge and your lack of strength, know that yours in comparison to mine is untouchable. And that's good. That's not bad for you. We're referred to also in terms of this in our day and age. Think about how insignificant we are in the grand scheme of things, in the great picture that God has for not just the scheme of redemption, but for us as Christians. It's easy to become prideful, and that's the first mistake that the nation of Israel had made. Throughout the course of the nations of Israel, what did they do? They turned to other gods. What did they say to Samuel? We want to be like what? The other nations, and we want to have a king. And he gets really upset and says, they've rejected me. And he says, no, Samuel, they didn't reject you, they rejected me. Throughout the course of the judges, the people continually turn away from God, and he has to have someone deliver them as well as judge them. Throughout the time of the kings, he continually delivers them, despite the fact that many of the kings that reign over them are destroying and defaming the name of God. Yet God still loves them. Why? Because they were his people. And we too, brethren, are his people. But to have the power and the access to his love and his power, we first must understand our state in terms of humility. The nation of Israel, first and foremost, in this passage, had to recognize the amount of humility necessary to see the power of God that could work through them. Philippians 2 and 3 tells us, that's Philippians 2 and 3, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. When it comes to fearing not, it may seem really irrational that I'm talking about humility. I realize that. But before we can have access to the power of God and the strength of God and the ability to no longer fear anything, we must recognize our place in the world and, more importantly, our place in the kingdom. We are but nothing before him. And that's why he alludes to the nation of Israel as worms. It's not that he thought that they were disgusting. It was that he was trying to explain to them, look, you are powerless before me, but in your humility, in your weakness, I can make you strong. I can make you powerful. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in terms of the power that he can give us. This should be the most prominent aspect of us, is this promised strength that we can have in him. Notice what he says after he describes this situation of humility. What's the second point here in terms of fear? What does he say? I will help you. As insignificant and as powerless as the nation of Israel is, what does God say? The creator of the universe, who spoke the world into existence, he says, I will help you. He says in other contexts, I will redeem you. In other contexts, I will be there for you. I will deliver you. King David often cries out to him whenever he's running from Saul, God, deliver me from this. God, deliver me. When he's in sin, he commits the sin that he does with Bathsheba. Some of the psalms that he writes about that very incident. Deliver me from my sin. In this context, we're talking physically for the nation to be delivered. What we're talking about tonight, brethren, is to deliver you and to give you the strength to step out and step in front of that giant in your life like David did. To say, I don't know who you serve, but I serve the God of the kingdom of Israel. I serve the God that spoke this world into existence. I serve the one who created all of us. He says, fear not, because what? I will help you. It is not the arrow. It's not the bow. It's not the shield. And it is not the sword that strikes fear into a person. Whether it was the Old Testament or we talk about the New Testament, it's not the weapon itself that should strike fear into the person. What did strike fear? The man and the heart behind that man. Think about Goliath. Why did they fear him? Did they fear the fact that his spear was like the length of a weaver's beam? Did they fear the fact that his sword was probably twice or three times the size of theirs? Did they fear the fact that he towered over them so much? No. It was more importantly that the arm holding that sword and the desire behind that man was going to destroy every one of them if they stepped in front of him. Yet this little shepherd boy steps in front of him, David, and says, I'm here. But the God that I serve is going to deliver from me, and I'm going to take your head before these people today. The question for us is, why do we stand in this day and age and think that the things of this world are what deliver us? The things of this world are what strengthen us. God is not going to accomplish in you anything until you empty yourself of this world and let Him complete you. What I mean by that is that one reference in the Old Testament or one reference in ancient history of the power of God would be, He will empty your grain stores and fill it with the finest of wheat. The free-flowing, pure, and true water of God is one that not a single drop comes from this earthly realm. In order for us to no longer fear Him, we do need to step back and say, I realize how powerless I am in this. I need you. Secondly, though, we have to open our hearts and we have to open our minds to the power of God. He says, I will help you. Brethren, the key there, though, in that context is, Gary can tell me that he'll help me fix my car if I have a flat. You know what I have to do, though? I have to let Gary help me fix the flat. If you want God to change your life and make you better, if you want Him to no longer allow you to fear things of this world and people of this world, you have to let Him in. You have to let Him in your heart. You have to let Him in your mind. And He must completely consume your life. You cannot defeat anything in this world without Him. And you cannot defeat anything in this world without anything but Him. If you think that you can, you are no different than the Israelites. You are no different than the nation of Israel, thinking that they have more power than what they did. Solomon was chastised because he did what? He filled his buildings with horses. In the time of the Old Testament, chariots and horses were like tanks and nukes today. They were the power of the power. The navies of the Athenians, with the Spartans, their shields and their swords and their phalanx. When you talk about the power of an army, does it reside, though, more in the shield and the spear or the desire and the passion behind those that wield those things? We know that answer. So the question for us would be, is God has given us the sword of truth. He's given us the shield of armor. He's given us all of these things to protect ourselves that we should not fear anything of this world. Yet what do? We rely on other people. We rely on other things of this world to give us that strength. I'm telling you from experience and telling you from the Bible that you cannot defeat anything spiritually or physically without completely submitting yourself to Him first. If you don't, you will not succeed. A small shepherd boy defeated someone that no one else thought he could. Why? Because he said, God already delivered me from the lion and from the bear. Who's this guy? He's nothing. Why do we not think that way? Why do we not act that way? Brethren, it's because we don't spend enough time praying. It's enough time studying. It's enough time realizing that the less that I put me first and the more I put Him first, the less I should fear about anything. You have to first let Him fill you up with love and power before you expect to have the strength to do the things that He asks of you. Finally, we have to labor to rid ourselves of fear. If you fear something, what makes you think that it's going to go away if you do nothing about it? We fear a lot of things in this world, don't we? I can tell you, starting out as a brand new nurse in an intensive care unit, I was scared to death every time I went to work, thinking, I'm going to do my ever-loving best to clock out 12 hours from now having not killed someone. That was my goal for the first couple of weeks. And you laugh, but I mean, truthfully, that was my mentality. I want to learn, but my goal here, first of all, is to not kill anybody. And I can tell you, every time I go to work, every time I prescribe a medication that could kill someone, every time I prescribe a procedure or I order something that could potentially put someone in a life-threatening situation, the reason that I don't fear it as much as I did 7 years ago is because I have worked to learn and have experience to know when to do those things and when not to do those things. I don't fear the unknown because now I have experience. I don't fear those things as much because I understand them. If you fear something in this life, what makes you think then that you're going to rid yourself of that fear if you do nothing to change it? You're worried about your life before God, yet you do nothing about it. You're going to continue in fear until you leave this world. Yet if you do something to fix that, you commit your life to Christ to be baptized in His newness of life, to come up into a newness of life and wash away your sins, or to recommit your life to Him after you've strayed away from Him. You're doing something about your salvation. You're doing something about that. Are you worried about your brother or your sister who's struggling with something? Yet you watch them struggle, and you watch them have that fear, and you do nothing about it, and you worry about that. But you do nothing about it. Why? Why? If we fear something, we must labor to rid ourselves of it. Does it begin with God? Yes. But belief is faith in action, brethren. Abraham did not take his son to offer him as a sacrifice simply because he said, well, it'll all work out. He had faith in God that no matter what happened, it was going to work out. When they leave his servants, he says, we'll return. Not I'll return, we'll return. When they get there, his son says, where's the sacrifice? God will provide, is his answer. Every time we have an opportunity to fear something, fear not, for God is with you. But if you don't work and labor to rid yourself of that fear, to seek those that can help you rid yourself of that fear, then what makes you think that it's going to go away? It's not. It's not going to leave you. Colossians 2 and 10, let's turn over there really quickly and read that for a second. Colossians 2 and 10, talking about His strength and His power. Colossians 2 and 10. And you are complete in Him who is the head of all principality and power. You want His strength. You want access to that. You've got to work at it, brethren. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a month's time, probably. Not going to happen in a year's worth of time. You want to grow and you want to mature and you want to make yourself right before Him. It's going to take work. But more importantly, to not fear the future, to not fear the unknown, to not fear for your children, to not fear for those things. It starts with having a sense of your weakness. It secondly works to understanding where your strength comes from. And finally, to be laboring to rid yourself of that fear. Because if you're not, then what are you doing with your life? If you're worried about where you're going to be in eternity, then what are you doing to fix it? If you're worried about someone in your life who isn't going to have an eternity, why are you standing by watching them waste their life away? You wouldn't do that yourself, so why would you watch someone else do it? Why would you watch someone else do it? In Isaiah, back in Isaiah in 41 and 14, he says, I will help you. I want you to also to notice what he says here. He says, I will help you, says the Lord, and your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Read with me continually in verse 15. Behold, I will make you into a new threshing sledge with sharp teeth. You shall thresh the mountains and beat them small, and make the hills like chaff. You shall winnow them. The wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. You shall rejoice in the Lord and glory in the Holy One of Israel. The poor and needy seek water, but there is none. Their tongues fail for thirst. I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in desolate heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar and the acacia tree, the myrtle and the oil tree. I will set in the desert the cypress tree and the pine and the box tree together, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it. You want access to the right kind of power? That's the kind of power that you want access to. So labor to find it. Labor to have access to it. He references them as worms, right? We think, oh, worms are insignificant. They're really not. The greatest ships can be destroyed by worms. The greatest and mightiest of men can be reduced to nothing by worms. Their power is in the strength of their jaws and their mouth. Our power is here and here as well. The power of our mouths can defeat kingdoms if we wish them to, as they have in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The power in the heart and the passion that we can have for God to open ourselves completely to Him can defeat the most formidable of enemies. Little insignificant us. Don't ever think that you can't make a change. Don't ever think that you don't make a difference. Don't ever, ever fear that you don't make an impact in this world, because you do. 100% you do. You make an impact in someone's life or many people's life in this world. Your choice is to fear the unknown and not do anything about it, or your choice is to labor to no longer fear what might happen and simply consider what will happen if you don't. Tonight has not been a lesson in regards to salvation. It has, however, had some parallelism to it. If you fear what your life is like before God, you should. If it's not right, you need to make it right. Whether that's because you're not a Christian or you are, His simple request. What's our invitation song tonight, Nathan? Can you put it on the board, please? There's a fountain free. 'Tis for you and me. That free flowing, pure and true water, He has given access to you through His Son. Simply make it right tonight before Him. And come while we stand and sing.